hello, listener. Thank you for downloading this pilot podcast. This has been an idea I've been thinking about and talking about for longer than I care to remember. Long enough to justify the use of the term pipe dream to describe it. My name is Nick, and I will be your host and guide through this collection of artistic works, critical analysis, rants, discussions, interviews, and anything else that comes across coherently for your ears. We live in interesting times. I bet every single person since forever has uttered that cliche as they contemplate the world that unfolds around them. The Earth has just hit a population of 7 billion people. Neoliberal economic principles have spread across the globe, bringing forth the great rise of the multinational corporation and their billion-dollar warships of lawyers, marketers, and business people. The internet, our fledgling global consciousness, now reaches into the minds of increasing numbers of humans across our Earth. Yet even with 7 billion of us pottering away on this floating rock, we still ponder. What's it all for? What am I, anyway? Thousands of years of human cultures and society have brought many answers, and with those answers, a profound realization that every answer opens more questions we had yet to think of. Your brain is a complex machine. Some say that the brains are one of the most complex things we know of, yet it is this device that you are using to compute reality right now. Your consciousness is the lens through which you pinpoint yourself in this universe. It seems odd that of all humanity has achieved, we still have more questions than answers about the machine through which we have used to achieve all of the things that humanity has achieved throughout time. Pondering types throughout human history's ranks have approached these questions, from philosophers and scientists to theologians and shamans. But you don't need a fancy label to ponder the big questions. Wisdom runs through all of us. It's just that some of us are better at joining the dots others have drawn than others are. And some of us are better at expressing ourselves in certain ways than others. That's where you come in. We are all visionaries. Our mind's eye provides us with a totally unique perspective of the one thing we all share together. You and I hold similarities. We're both humans and have most of the same hardware. We both speak the same language and generally comprehend each other. We both live on the planet Earth. Yet each consciousness is like a piece of a grand puzzle. Only when connected do we truly make any sense at all. I realize that I have just spent the last few minutes weaving infinite vagueness into something that sounds like it means something. I kind of feel like that's all we ever do. But let's focus. This podcast is our collaborative puzzle table. It would be a logistical nightmare to try and join all of the dots at once. But there is something we share. The visionary states of mind, invoked through music, through meditation, through reading, through walking, through adventure and exploration of all types, is our common trait. Our current society generally looks at the visionary states of mind with a skeptical eye, and rightly so. But it also condemns some of the most intriguing explorations of this state of mind, guarding itself with laws, like sentries and snipers who stand atop the walls that have physically divided humans before. The many and varied things we ingest to alter our consciousness are mostly condemned in a way that refuses to listen to the good and is all too happy to trumpet the bad and pretend that that's all there is. Our society quietly defines some of these things outside of this perverse dualistic paradigm, while to most it says, just say no. We must always remember to keep skeptical and use our critical thinking abilities to analyze this reality unfolding around us. Welcome to Encyclopedia, our collaborative voice.
My body is an instrument that allows my soul to express itself. I don't know what kind of musician I am. I play the music I like and that's it. I am in a perpetual self-construction process. I don't want to stop and tell myself I have achieved something. I don't have a specific goal. I only want to let my music grow. Music is the purest thing.
With the purest thing. Details on where to find more about the artists in this podcast can be found at the end of the podcast. This is In Psychedelia. The media across Australia regularly engage in pissy reporting on a varying range of substances, usually in one of three forms of news reporting: a vague scientific report, a drug haul report, or a fear attack. Channel 7 News engaged in the third, a fear attack, on Monday the 6th of August 2012.
Sydney medical experts are warning of possible brain damage from hallucinogenic plants used by South American medicine men. A 7 News investigation has found them being sold from a hidden farm on the state's north coast, where the owners boast the law can't touch them.
This is the headquarters of Shaman Australis.
The Channel 7 News team chuck in a substance most of their viewers have probably never heard of.
And this is what they sold us: the exotic plants needed to make the hallucinogenic drink ayahuasca, and this, a little more recognisable, a 4-foot cactus containing mescaline.
But the house specialty ingredients for ayahuasca, a drink used in Peru for mind-altering experiences. Users routinely become physically ill before experiencing a deep hallucination. And it's being used in secretive ceremonies across Australia.
Hallucinogens, you've just surrendered control of your brain, and you may also be leading to permanent brain damage.
And that last bit was from a token medical expert. The expert in question is Dr. Gordian Fould of Sydney's St. Vincent Hospital. Dr. Fould is head of the emergency department and attended the Catholic Institute, the University of Notre Dame. He has no particular expertise in neuroscience, pharmacology, biology, plants, or anything to do with substances other than having to deal with those who enter his department, which I'll remind you is the emergency room. Other than Shaman Australis owner Torsten, the report also has a grab from the New South Wales Attorney General, Greg Smith.
We are concerned at stamping them out as much as possible or restricting their use or growth.
This rational politician is reciting a little piece of politrickery policy that came out last year when the Federal Attorney General announced plans to ban a wide range of plants, including some common natives. Channel 7 News have reported absolutely nothing here. All they have done is proliferate a fear campaign against something which none of the people in this report, other than Torsten and the Shaman Australis lot, know anything about. Dr. Fould's claims of brain damage are unsubstantiated nonsense. Drug reporting in Australia is abysmal. When I worked in commercial radio, there were several kinds of stories that we would always report, no matter how significant or how good the facts we had were. One of those was anything to do with drugs. The justification was that it is meant to be in the public interest. It's meant to be in the public interest because it is concerning to the public. It's concerning to the public because it is illegal. It is illegal because, well, that varies substance to substance, and most people don't know anything about the controversial history of the drug war and its laws, but it's illegal! And bad for your health! And the children! All the addicted children on the drugs! All right. Sorry, lost my way. Where was I? Drug reporting in Australia is a feedback loop. Blame the news agencies and you get half a story. See that the agencies are producing stories for a population that wants those stories, and you start to get a more accurate understanding. Channel 7 News doesn't have to know what ayahuasca is, what it does, or anything about it. The audience is already programmed with this term, drugs, and all the negative things that are attached to it. Some emergency room guy can make a claim like it causes brain damage, and most people will just nod and lament on the scourge of drugs and how to stamp it out and blah blah blah. So then, what's the answer? Well, that's for you to ponder. When you cast your critical eye over a news report, such as Channel 7's, what do you see? Thanks to the Entheogenesis Australis connections for bringing this one to my attention. Thank you. and psychedelia. That was Alex with Carla's Calling.
101 Colours by Joshua Buckle. On our arboreal ancestors' shoulders we stand precarious. On an arboreal path to nowhere in particular, we declare ourselves the chosen few who can in the secrets of life delve. However, the message that's come back so clearly was in fact about ourselves. On closer inspection, in between the snivelling, laughable leaders and the Siamese psychosis that's all we've left to believe in, we retreated to the promise and the darkness under covers that the blanket security and its pseudo-logic had promised us. For we were ravished by a system implemented for convenience, tight tug-of-war style to the demons who've been feeding us. Believe in us, we cried, heads tilted back unto the sky. But all we heard in return was a collective sigh. Humans quickly filled the planet, exponentially as they had came, feasting on creatures great and small to feed our needs and deed our brains. Utopia or oblivion, we had been given all that could be got. Separation, initiation, and return, the path had been burnt in and locked. Mimicking the behavior of nature in all its guts, gore, and glory, armed with salvation point mentality and a mercurial edge, we carved our story into the oak tree of history, like a young lover's pledge. Spontaneous in its birth, spontaneous in its death, for a while inseparable to each other's touch, each other's breath. Circumstantially ensnared, symbiotic, manifest. Prophecy and history were to become the same thing as we sat tempting fate, the taste of our beliefs on tips of tongues that lashed its words as bait. Still, science pondered, the mystics wandered, the religions wandered of their prophecies. The feeble-minded became hindsighters, whilst rogues with their hostility grew into warlords who swung swords, erecting flags and claiming nations. Selling fickle dreams and pleasantries, bringing mundane to the equation. Elation came in such short bursts, the fever was increasing. The curfew came and in its wake was global thought policing. The fences and watchtowers grew higher. Offences were redefined to include the peaceful ones innocently living their lives. Apply yourself, they screamed at us, rally behind the flag. Buckle down and take pride in all of what you have. But remember where it came from. Remember those who've died. We may call these times of peace, but the war is there in silence. These troubled times were flashed from all angles, vicariously before our eyes. Indeed, it seemed the revolution would in fact be televised. Then slowly through the art of surreptitious storytelling, the double speak reached history's pages. Our timelines had been revised. Some tried to hide. Some fought losing battles on front lines, inspired from high horses. Some strapped themselves in for this ride of a lifetime. Some flaunted undaunted. Some brooded, rooted themselves into aperture stare. Some sought methods thought act of terrorism. Some thought it necessary to sacrifice care. Angles, 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 so many angles. The truth had been dangled in front of humanity, on our ride through the cosmos, on our sojourn temporary. The truth of our awakening, the truth of our seduction into insanity, the truth that we cannot live without each other, nor at this rate live our potentiality. We, nations and countries, an invading populace that demanded respect in the face of natives' pleas, only to become further nations and countries, leaving its people in debt, overnourished or hungry. Remember, from our summit we can plummet, or from our perch can be birthed. From our perspective so eclectic, we have returned to find reality staring back, neutral grey inside our eyes, to which, who am I? All us little people replied. Who are you anyway? The power-hungry delighted. Frightened, we surrendered our power in an hour benighted. That enlightened age was a stage. but a man-made myth. I wonder when our relics will be returned and swallowed in the grit. I followed the Pied Piper. I followed the Saviour's flavour. I followed the lemmings steady as they approached the embankment. I followed the daily news and the conspirators monitoring the ruse. But until I swallowed my disappointment, I wallowed hollow at the ankles of the muse. She showed me the plunder. She showed me love. She showed me patience and in wordless ways explained within and above. She showed me for what I am and of life and of death. And in that moment's coordinates, took away my breath. She showed me the light of pain. We are a rainbow of inconceivable numbers, yet quantized and defined into 100 colors. 100 colors, 100 monkeys, 100 dilapidated, worn-out junkies, 100 versions of you, 100 of me, 100 reasons we need to be freed, 100 perspectives eclectic and growing, 100 plundered, 100 knowing, 100 dreading, 100 hungered. Truth is, 100 is but a number hung in the dungeons of our slumber. 100 is but a number hung in the dungeons of our slumber. And we've slept for so long, now torn asunder by the roars of snores and the nightmare's canter. This is the case. Then I'm the 101st color. 101 I choose for my number. Just another brick in the wall, a link in the chain of the game we call all. Confounded and surrounded, so I surrender and free fall. But what else is there to do? Define me as you'd like to. But I, like you, am not a number you can buy or sell. Left hung, delirious and somniferous cells. If I can't see that in you, how can I expect you to?
Words are one of the most useful innovations of our species. Through this type of communication, we can use sounds and symbols to represent things in this world. Even further than that, though, we can join basic things together, forming concepts, ideas. We can draw on our imagination and share a creative vision with each other. It is interesting, then, to realize that your understanding of the definition of a word is unique. Though you no doubt share a similar core understanding of most words with your fellow English-speaking brethren, you may be surprised to realize that you don't actually mean the same thing. There are some words that are hijacked. The reasons are many for this sort of hijacking, such as corporate branding, politics, or a new experience requiring the shifting of an older concept. There are some out there that grow frustrated with semantics, the study of meaning. But at the core of all human interaction is semantics. Without understanding what these symbols and sounds we use to communicate really mean to each other, we might as well be whispering into the wind. With this in mind, I'd like you to contemplate for a moment. Contemplate on this word. Drugs. Perhaps this word made you feel some sort of emotion. What do you think of when you think of drugs? I went out to see what people think.
There's lots of things, isn't it? Covers all sorts of stuff, doesn't it?
Is it a good or bad, you know? It's a bad thing, but I don't know, people get good feelings off it.
Marijuana.
Nuts.
Bad.
Fun.
Entheogenesis.
Stupid.
Fun.
Youth.
Yeah, fun.
Bad.
Dirty syringes.
Drugs. What do you think of?
Medicine.
Recreational.
It's very bad thing, and it will make people much harder to alive.
Trouble or maybe addiction, something like that.
Something I don't relate to at all. I don't understand.
Party time.
I pity the guys who are into it. Whoever. Hopefully they'll find, you know, a better reason, you know, not to do drugs here.
Just to get the relax.
I think drugs are bad.
It's not so good. Bad, I guess.
Shake my head.
Cocaine.
Hayden. Scourge.
I'm agreeing with him.
Yeah, crazy.
West.
Well, generally, sort of loser, if you think of that, recreational drugs.
It balance.
I don't know, drugs bad?
which makes people crazy.
Medicine. Help people. Helping people with their conditions, whatever that may be.
diving into a fractal. That's a day on In Psychedelia. As the June Queen's birthday weekend rolls around, fungal hunters across Australia gear up to head outside and scour the landscape. Every year, it comes with warnings, usually in the most unfortunate form of an unwary mushroom hunter consuming a species they misidentified, resulting in their untimely death. Alongside the culinary hunters are thousands searching for the coveted magic mushroom. Although the Therapeutic Goods Administration lists the active ingredient in these mushrooms, psilocybin, as a Schedule 9 prohibited substance, which is Australia's most restrictive category, many of you still choose to imbibe in this wild fungus. Although I recommend you check your local laws, I know that in the end, it is not the law, a government, the executive force of the police, a church or religion, family members or friends that truly decide what you put in your body. It will be you who decides that in the end. With this in mind, I recommend that you are cautious, educated, and critical toward that which you decide to consume. There may be negative repercussions and consequences. But people don't return to the hunt year after year, decade after decade, century after century, and even millennia after millennia to experience something negative. People return to explore something deeply intriguing.
I'm going
to
talk about a significant mushroom trip that I had a couple of months ago. In the lead up to this significant trip, I'd been taking quite a lot of mushrooms, but was still in the honeymoon phase of the drug, so to speak. My experiences were fun, beautiful, and enlightening, but the prospect of mushrooms being scary or dangerous was only a reality of government propaganda or the unassuming person who has taken too many mushrooms on their first attempt. I do not think my headspace before the dose was a major contributing factor to the experience, because I'd had quite a relaxed day reading, watching movies, and writing. The purpose of this trip was to deflower my good friend who was a virgin to the experience, and after spending time with me canvassing the local area for the friendly fungi, he developed an interest in experiencing the drug too. I picked him up from the train station, and at my house we got straight to business with a very mild cup of tea before wasting some time playing video games. Half an hour is usually my measurement for effects, and having not felt anything yet, we chased the tea up with some caps and a stronger cup of tea. Another half an hour before some body tingles developed, so at my suggestion we went for a walk in the brisk night air. The experience overcame my friend fairly quickly, and after standing in a field watching the sky and talking about different forms of oxygen between here and the moon, I knew I wanted to be where he was, so took a few more caps. It was about another 20 minutes before I walked into the trip, and my consciousness began vibrating with sensation, ideas taking on worlds of their own in my mind and in our organic conversations. I think playing the part of spiritual guru or shaman was helpful for the first half of the trip, because in directing him towards the most helpful train of thought, I was able to articulate my own thoughts away from meaningless meanderings to more intrinsic values. Observing him showed how beginners can be quite overwhelmed with the sensory experience, and that first sensation of your mind unchained and running free and agile that you don't question how worthwhile the thoughts actually are. He would get so caught up in believing that construction of roads was a form of government repression and useless infrastructure dominating natural resources that he didn't consider the many functions a road has, its necessity for communications, relationships, and bridging people to the world around them. Yet when he disappeared at a nearby park for 2 minutes to urinate in a bush, my perceived status of spiritual guide fell apart. It was like my brain was waiting for a moment alone to ambush me with doubts and insecurities. I perceived, because of how much activity was passing through my brain that night, that in my everyday life, by contrast, I mustn't be thinking at all. I was convinced that everyone else must be workshops of creativity and idea, and I was a thoughtless phony who would eventually be revealed and shunned for my normality. When my friend returned, the doubts fled, but it marked the beginning of a depression that seeped into every facet of the rest of my trip. Houses seemed to me the embodiments of a materialistic society when I observed aimless trinkets scattered in their yards. A syringe near a child's playground overwhelmed me with the corruption of innocence and a feeling of doomed well-being for future generations. Fast, sleek cars that are meant to represent the success of the modern businessman were an X-ray to my eyes into the hollow purpose of their own life. I now know how facetious and narcissistic these thoughts are, but at the time it was so overwhelming I had to return to my house and retreat to a bed in the hope that sleep would extinguish the night. It doesn't work that easily, and it was here that it seemed the trip really began. The emotions and profundities of that night were like a roller coaster or an oscillating spectrum. I would descend into a nightmare realm in my head or in the room, I'm not entirely sure, where rats populated the terrain and had violent intercourse which ended with them committing seppuku with a samurai sword. My blanket was suffocating me with the scorn of every ex-girlfriend I've ever had, and when removed, the icy disapproval of my parents made me so chilled I had to put it back on. Venturing into the toilet, I glanced into the mirror and my face seemed to be made of dead skin. It melted away like in the Cronenberg horror films I'd been watching lately and turned into the face of my father. This was punctuated by moments of redemption where I was aware that everyone had my insecurities and we were in this together, but just as soon as I felt I was out of my rut, it would fluctuate down again. It wasn't until the first crack of dawn, some 7 hours later, that I stopped climbing up the walls and found some solitude in sleep. Altogether, this experience was terrifying but essential. I don't think I grasped how little I knew about my own insecurities, and confronting them is not something I would want to do again soon, but I feel the experience was invigorating in putting a new perspective on my life and relationship with psychedelics.
This is In Psychedelia. Thank you for listening to the Pilot Podcast. For details on the contributors, visit insychedelia.podomatic.com or look us up on Facebook. To the contributors, thank you for making this happen. Most importantly, though, to you, thank you for downloading this and listening. I hope to keep the metaphorical ball rolling on this, and I'm looking for more contributors. So if you're an artist of some type, have a story to tell, would like to rant and rave about something, or have a comment to make, or anything else that translates into audio, then send In Psychedelia a message.